ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central.
Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
What's going on? Happy Monday. This is Sports Central. Adam Hogue and Kevin Powell sitting in today. This is Monday, February 26, 2018. Phone number 312-235-2525. You can find Sports Central on iTunes and the Google Play Store if you do not listen live. But if you do, you're listening on WGNRadio.com or your WGN Radio app. We appreciate you doing that. Kevin Powell is back from Arizona.
What's up, man?
So did you have to do your laundry? Because you didn't pack for that long of a trip.
No, I did overpack. I had my final pair of clean boxers like basically lined up perfectly, and same with the socks. But I will admit that I was going to do some dry cleaning for just like button-up shirts, but you can wear a button-up shirt a couple times before you need to wash it. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Sure. Okay. It's the undershirts and
the undershirts and the boxers
and the underwear and the Arizona
and
heat.
Like exactly, which I didn't have much of, by the way.
I know.
Because and I get back today and I put my winter coat on and I'm sweating. This is basically what we had most of the time I was out there, which was high 50s, low 60s and sunny, which I'm not complaining, but when I do go out there, this is my fourth year.
Yeah, it's nice to have the 80 and sunny.
I want to burn. Yeah. I want to sweat a little bit.
Yeah, James's bus driver went to Arizona last week on vacation. She was not happy
this
morning when I saw her.
See, the locals don't mind it because they know what's coming in a couple months, in a month, when it's 100 degrees and sunny and they're all dying out there. So a lot of them are cool with it if you ask some of the locals to try to make some small talk. They're like, we're okay with it. But everyone that's out there from Chicago.
Yeah, you want the.
Like, you want 80 and sunny. But yesterday was the best day yet. It was. It's like 68, 69, 70 and sunny. And I'm not going to lie, I walked out of the press box, as I think many members of the media did late in the game, and just posted up in the seats for a few innings.
Good for you. Yeah, I was out there in Arizona. The Bears played the Cardinals in the preseason. That heat was no joke.
Yeah,
I've always said, like, I think I'd rather have Arizona summer than Chicago winter. And then just being out there for one day, because I love the sun. I love summer. That was like ridiculous. It was 105 degrees. Yeah. Wow.
It feels like it's right on top of you. I mean, even yesterday when it was just 70, it's the Valley of Sun for a reason. It just feels different out there with the sun. You can just feel it on your skin. It felt great yesterday, but 100. The golf seasons are flipped. You know, the summer is basically the equivalent of our winter, where you get summer rates. Where here, summer rates is peak season for golf. So it's completely flipped in terms of the golf season.
Well, Tom Skilling couldn't make it today, but that's your Sports Central weather recap.
By the way, tomorrow's game, Cubs Sox, which is supposed to be broadcast right here on your new home for White Sox baseball. Weather not looking good tomorrow. We'll keep you posted. As of now, it hasn't been scrapped or postponed or anything like that, but there's some rain in the forecast, some winds right around first pitch around 2 o'clock central, so we'll keep you posted there.
Yeah, hopefully that game gets in. Kevin Powell was in Arizona for almost 2 weeks, and we're going to talk plenty of baseball with him, so let's jump right in with today's lead.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball to left. This is it well. To the track goes Kemp at the wall, a 380, gone. A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
So
that ball was obliterated.
That was the first White Sox home run called here on WGN Radio. Tim Anderson on Friday, early in that game, our first broadcast in the White Sox first game of the spring. That was a good sign. I mean, I know it's spring training, but you were out there in Arizona talking about the confidence, the different attitude that Tim Anderson has, and he steps right up to a plate. That was his first at bat, correct?
Yes. First at bat, home run. He is a, we talked about this a little bit, but I think he's going to have, if he stays healthy, a really strong year. He is like a completely different person. He's off to a pretty good start in the spring, although we're not going to look too much into the numbers and things like that. But man, he is a completely different person than the guy I knew last year. This year he's talking with us. He's coming up to us. He's going out of the way to kind of shake hands and goof around with us. I was asking him to do some liners, like, hey, this is Tim Anderson on the new home of White Sox baseball, WJ.
I was
like that.
Wondering if they were going to put you in charge of that.
They did.
Because somebody has to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward.
Yeah.
But anyways, I did my best, so I hope Chris Duffy can make it sound usable.
Well, if you don't do it, then we just, like, Joe's got to sit back there, and he's got to voice one.
Yeah, I'd listen
to
that.
Or I could go to the park and talk to guys.
Yeah. It's tough, though, because you're basically catching them. The clubhouse is open for, you know, 30, 40 minutes, an hour in the morning, and a lot of the guys are showers, coming from workouts, going to workouts. You're trying to, like, hey, so we're the, you're like, explaining the whole thing to every person. We're the new flagship for the White Sox.
And they're like, what's a flag?
Right. And they've, you know, and then I basically pinned Carson Falmer and Lucas Giolito against one another. Because I had Falmer do it one day, and I'm like, dude, you got to give me some more energy, man. you got to give me something. He's like, all right. So anyways, the next day I had Giolito. Giolito was really into it. He was like, okay, how's the sound? Are we picking up these guys over here? Because some guys were playing cards, like, in the clubhouse. He was so dialed in. And then I'm like, Carson, that was pretty good from Lucas, man. You want to go? And I think Lucas was a little better. Lucas Giolito is a smart guy, by the way.
I was impressed with
the... a recording device?
That would be a recording device, yeah, a microphone. Yeah.
It's good that they supplied that for you.
Yes, it's a must if you're a reporter. Yeah. Big things, big technological advances here using a microphone. So, Tim Anderson, good to see him get off to a fresh start. And I know we've talked about this, but that was just my biggest takeaway from... And I know it's so cliche and it's an easy narrative to throw out there that... It's a different feeling that there's excitement, that they're buying in. Reality's going to set in a couple months when they're playing under 500 or losing a lot of games.
I like that there's a good vibe.
So do I.
You know, I like that there's confidence. It's more of an individual thing probably than we're going to really win 90 games or something like that. But if everybody's coming in confident and having fun...
It's loose. It is fun. And I'll give them that. Yesterday morning, we're standing outside the clubhouse, and I hear this banging noise. Like, what is that? So they finally open the door to the clubhouse, and we go in, and Yolmer Sanchez, little Yolmer, is walking around the clubhouse with a drum, like a bongo. And he's just banging it and pounding it and doing laps around the clubhouse, and everyone's laughing and goofing around. We're like, what the hell is going on? Apparently, he stole it from Thiago Vieira, the relief pitcher, and just felt like banging the drum and walking around. We saw James Shields and Nicky Delmonico showcasing a card trick that everyone seemed to enjoy. Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu and Yoan Moncada were wrestling and dogpiling each other in the backfields. There seems to be some genuine relationships being built there.
Now, I heard you on yesterday with Mark Harmon on WGN, and you said that the feeling then when you go across town to Mesa was completely different. Business-like atmosphere for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, it's interesting that these guys are basically still, for the most part, Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Javi Baez, they're 23, they're 24, and they feel like veterans already because they've played in so many huge games, and there's been so many huge moments that... I think for them, I think they're having fun. There's still some joking around. It's not overly serious, especially when you have Joe Maddon as your skipper. It's never going to be overly serious. But it does definitely feels different with the Cubs this year compared to last year's spring when they were coming off the World Series victory. And I think they were focused, but and fans don't want to hear it, that they were tired or worn out a little bit, you know, against the Dodgers in the NLCS. But they basically had no offseason last year. They didn't. And for a group of players to basically climb Mount Everest of the sports world, get to the top, and then 2-3 months later you're being asked to do it all over again, that's a lot. And they still got to the NLCS. I just think this year they're dialed in. Ben Zobrist was like, as we headed in the offseason, there was a different feeling. Like when we were all leaving that day, it was just a different feeling. And they're dialed in. They're focused. That's kind of what I took from their clubhouse over the past couple weeks.
Well, I think that that's just a contrast of two teams in two completely different situations.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs, the expectation is to win the World Series this year.
That's a good expectation.
It now, is. I've been trying to figure out. It's reasonable, and I think it's legitimate to put that on them.
I'm not sure they're the best team, though.
Okay. Let's break down who is the best team.
Well, I think the Astros are still...
Okay,
certainly up there.
All around baseball,
But they're going to be dealing with the same thing the Cubs did. Let's not forget that. And it is hard to repeat, as the Cubs proved last year. I would not be shocked if the Astros go through some similar struggles early in the season, have some fatigue issues late. That's pretty normal. The Dodgers are interesting to me because, you know, they're just as loaded. They might have the most talent in all of baseball. They've also been playing.
Cubs have a better pitching staff.
True. But they played just as late as the Cubs did a year ago. Right. They Game 7 World Series, but they didn't get it. So does that mean that they're a little bit hungrier than maybe the Cubs were last year? But they could still also have those fatigue issues playing. And this has been a run of like 3 years in a row now for some of these teams, including the Cubs.
Well, I was kind of hoping, because the Sox and Dodgers share Camelback Ranch, and I was kind of hoping to sneak over there one day. I didn't get a chance to, just to kind of get a vibe and see what things are like over there. But back to the Astros. They're not only just dealing with a World Series victory. That's their first ever. So that's kind of similar to the Cubs, which they had won, but it had been 108 years. So they're, you know, they basically climbed their own Mount Everest relative to their franchise.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be dealing with some of the same things. So what was the... First of all, what time did you get home last night?
I landed about 1:30. By the time I got baggage and Uber, probably like 2:30-ish or something.
So that was like going to bed, and you were still posting Instagrams from Arizona, and I was like, he said he was going to be on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
You are here. I can confirm that.
You know, it's I'm not complaining, but it's weird. It felt like I was there for a very long time, but it also was a blur because it's just, when you're there every day, they're long days. I mean, you're getting to the clubhouse at 8 a.m. or so, you're getting to the ballpark at 7:30, and then you're going, and when I'm anchoring, it's long days. So it feels like one of those, it's kind of like guys that do the like full beat reporting, like baseball guys, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Like when I travel with the team in the postseason for every single game, and you're flying and bouncing back and stuff, like, I'm gassed by the end of it. The past 2 weeks, when you're there all day long, you're gassed by the end of it. I don't know how guys that like travel, Mark Gonzalez and, you know, Gordon Witt, that are there for every game. It's a grind, man. It's a grind. That's why you hear so many like baseball curmudgeon-y, old cranky guys, and I totally get it. I mean, they're there every day.
No, I get it, and it's it gets kind of repetitive, right?
Yeah.
Look, I get tired when I have, say a rush back on a Monday morning after a late Sunday game because, you know, the Bears have a 1 o'clock press conference at Halas Hall. You got to get up early.
Right.
No sleep.
Right.
That happens like maybe three or four times a season.
Yeah.
In baseball, it's like three or four times a week.
Yeah. And you're going back and forth to the same cities within your division.
Yeah.
It's a grind. We're not complaining, everybody. Believe me. I love it. I love the grind, but it does take a toll on you.
Yeah. We don't have to do that. So we're not the ones complaining. I'm just kind of giving the appreciation like you are to the people that do it because it is.
It's a grind, man.
It is impressive. What was the best food you got while you're out there?
My uncle lives out there and he took me out to a steak dinner.
Boom.
A couple Saturdays ago, a place called Stockyards, which I recommend. And it's been around for like 100 years. It was built on the Stockyards. So basically, it was a giant acres and acres of stockyards with cattle, and they built a restaurant there. So you were getting your meat right from the backyard, essentially. So it's been around for like 100 years.
That's not the place just south of Tempe, is it? They actually have like a Longhorn bowl there?
No.
No.
No, this is north of Tempe. This is more Phoenix. So anyways, that was good. That was a very old school steakhouse. So I got a big 16-ounce ribeye, medium rare, obviously, some Parmesan potato stack, and a little pecan pie action.
Anything exotic? Did you have like scorpion or rattlesnake?
No. I did go to Mark Gonzalez for the Tribune who covers the Cubs. He wrote a little like basically a travel guide for anyone from Chicago going out there for spring training, where to eat, which I thought was really interesting. So my last night was Saturday night, and I saw him. I'm like, dude, where should I go? It's my last night in the desert before I go back. He's like, go to this place called Carlsbad Tavern. It's a Mexican place, but they kind of have like your traditional Mexican food, but there's also some unique take.
Just to clarify, is it Carlsbad Tavern or Carlsbad Tavern?
Well, it's one word, Carlsbad Tavern.
Okay, because if bad tavern, I don't think you know.
No. I was just trying to, because Gonzalez said it to me like 10 times. I'm like, dude, slow down. What is it? He's like, Carlsbad Tavern. I'm like, so I was trying to say it slowly for the listeners. Anyways, they have kind of a different take on Mexican food. Like, for example, Mexican pot stickers, which was stuffed with chicken and chilies and then slathered with this Mexican sauce, which was incredible. Did some elote, and what else did I have? Oh, I had some...
elotes.
I love it. And
that came up on the Steve Cochran show the other day.
It did?
Because, what was the question, Steve?
So
someone asked, what's the best food at the Cell?
Yeah, Andrea.
It is. That's right up there at the Cell. That's my favorite.
So Andrea asked Mark Harmon what his favorite food is at the park, and he goes, oh, they got this corn in a bowl. And
he called it the corn product. They had this corn product.
This corn product.
So he didn't even know the name of it.
Is it a low tease or a low tase? How do you say it?
I think that's part of the whole, I would think the Spanish one is elotes.
Yeah, elotes. That's right.
That's nice. Anyways, I love it. And I also had some quesadilla situation. But at 35th and Shields, it's the first time I had it was there. And it's still one of my favorite that I've had. Also, I'm still anxiously awaiting the media relations email, the PR email from the White Sox they send out around this time of year telling us when the media food tasting event is.
Now we're talking.
It's awesome.
You got to make sure that you still got dibs on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I might email them and be like, hey, I need to put this on my calendar. When are we trying some new food out? Which every time I go to, like if I'm going as a fan, and even sometimes when I'm there just covering a game, I'll just pop out of the press box real quick and go get a Polish with onions. There's nothing better.
Yeah, that's
nothing better.
I wasn't asked that question. We were all on Steve Cochran show together, but that's what I was going to say.
Polish with onions.
I like just the grilled hot dog, too.
Yeah.
They had that the jalapeno hot dog thing last year. It's like a spicy sausage.
They also have the bacon cheddar hot dog, which was featured at the media food tasting a couple years ago. When I saw it, I'm like, this can't be good. It's on a pretzel bun. It's a hot dog covered in cheese and bacon. It was the best thing I had at the food tasting.
Yeah,
wow.
They actually sold out on opening day because Kevin ate them all.
That's right.
Before the...
And because the game didn't exist, we could just go in there and buy stuff and not watch baseball.
What?
It was snowed out.
Oh. Was it?
Yeah, wasn't it?
It was nasty. I was there for pregame and it was raining. See, I think you're right. Yeah, that's a good call, Joe. All right,
we're going to take a timeout. The Blackhawks made a big trade. It is the NHL trade deadline actually coming up at 2 o'clock. If you're listening live, we're about 40 minutes away. We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll get you the details on this Ryan Hartman trade coming up next. You're listening to Sports Central.
Hartman on the ice, intercepts the pass, Hawk line, racing back through center ice, over the capital line, splits the defense, moves right in on goal, in the back, and he scores! Ryan Hartman with authority roasted the Capitals defense, went right in on Holpe and ripped a backhander by him. It's 5-1 Hawks.
All right, let's continue this love fest.
There it is.
It's Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
No big deal.
On demand and in real time on WGNRadio.com.
Adam Hogue with Kevin Paulu sitting in for the whole hour today on Sports Central. Ryan Hartman traded to the Nashville Predators today. He had a pretty promising 2016 season, started to tail off late last year, and really couldn't put it together much this year. The Blackhawks trade him in a fifth-round pick to Nashville. They end up getting a first-rounder in return, which I was pretty impressed by. Scott King hosts the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast for WGN Radio. He joins Sports Central now. What's going on, Scott?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So grade the trade. What did you think here?
Gosh, you know what? It's tough. It's tough to break down. I will go A. I'll give Stan Bowman an A for this. But in saying that, Ryan Hartman's not a guy you want to lose. He's a heart and soul guy. Plays with a lot of grit. You know, coaches call players like that sandpaper players. Play with some sandpaper, and you could throw him on your top six. He played a lot with Kane this year, especially as recently as a couple weeks ago. Look good playing with Patrick Kane, but you know, so would me and you, Kevin. And he's played with Taves too, and he can play in special teams. He did really good drawing penalties this year instead of committing too many penalties. So it's not a guy you want to lose, but the Hawks, you know, they are going to be rebuilding more. And you're not just getting a first-round pick for him. You're getting a fourth-round pick, and you're getting a prospect in Victor Edsel that the Hawks were actually asking Nashville about before this season. And he should look good. You know, he's 6'4", 215 pounds, 30 points in 44 games in the Swedish Hockey League. So he's a guy who can play center and seems to have a scoring touch and some size, and the Blackhawks should definitely use that up the middle.
So let's lay out the timeline a little bit here up until when they did actually trade him. He comes out of the game, doesn't play the final two periods over the weekend. Was that Saturday's game?
Yeah.
I'll just ask you why. Why did they trade Ryan Hartman?
I think, you know, it seems there's reported that Nashville was maybe the only team that would give up a first-round pick, and they got a first-round pick and a lot more. So I think, you know, when asking so much for Hartman, I don't think they were necessarily wanting to trade him. And before this season, if you would have told me that was going to happen, I'd be pretty surprised. I thought he was the guy who was going to be on Hawks for a long time. So I just think it's because the return was so good. I don't think they were actively shopping him. And, you know, yeah, he sat after committing a really bad penalty in the last game that led to a goal. But I think Quinville would have done that anyways, you know, no matter if they're shopping him at any point in the season. So I just think it's because the return was so good. You know, I think Stan Bowman might even be a little surprised with what he was able to get.
The trade deadline's in about 35 minutes, Scott. What's next for the Blackhawks? Who's next to go? Is there any other trades in the works?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, this might have taken a little bit of convincing. You might see a small move here or there. Lance Boma, you know, cleared waivers and is in Rockford now. He's the guy who played on the fourth line. Looked good. Played with a lot of intensity. Has a little bit of skill, but he cleared waivers. He's going to be in Rockford. So I don't see any more bigger moves. I think that this might have taken some convincing for Nashville to make happen. And like I said, they get a lot in return, and Stan Bowman and company have to be pretty happy with it.
Scott King hosts the Blackhawks Crazy podcast with Chris Bowden on WGNRadio.com. You can find it on iTunes and Google. He's a great resource for Blackhawks here on WGN. So this is more of a big picture question, but I think it's what everyone wants to know. We all kind of realize the Blackhawks didn't have a whole lot of options here going into the trade deadline. They end up getting a first round pick and a player, which is good. But what are really the prospects for this team headed into the offseason? We kind of realize not going to make the playoffs at this point. What else can Stan Bowman do here in the short term to make this team more competitive by next year?
No, that's a good question. I think something I've been wanting to see done, and hopefully it will happen now, is Alex DeBrincat getting more top 6 minutes, playing with either Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane. And I think the way his game is, his skill is similar to Kane's, a big playmaker, has great vision, has some speed. I'd like to see him play with Kane a lot more, further develop him. You know, you're talking about a guy who in his rookie season, second on the team in goals behind Patrick Kane with 22 goals. So he's already having a great season, but why not develop his skill even more and maybe get a good look at him with Kane for next season? And I think with Lance Boma clearing waivers, I think you're going to see John Hayden come back. And he's a guy who played similar to Hartman and similar to Andrew Shaw with grit and some skill. So I'd like to see him back and get some good minutes. And this is a season where, you know, the young guys and the prospects, when they got a chance, they did play well on the Blackhawks. Adam, I think that they played well, and it was the veterans who needed to pick up the intensity. And you don't know how beat up guys are. You guys know from football and other sports, you can't really question effort too much because you know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know what's going on with guys' bodies, especially when they played. If you look at the Hawks' core, they played an extra 2 seasons when you count Olympics and playoffs. So that's a lot of wear and tear, and the only guy who seems to be handling it well is Patrick Kane.
Yeah, I think it's a good call on DeBrincat. I think his style of play projects well for a long-term career in the NHL, especially the way things are being played now on the ice. You look at the success Kane's continued to have among the core guys. But speaking of the core guys, Scott, I know there's just, and I don't even know if any of this is really warranted or any truth to it, but you constantly hear Hawks fans talking about it. You see it on social media, potentially trading a core guy. The problem is, one, I don't know if they even want to do that. I'll let you answer that. But two, all of them have these massive contracts that would it even be worth it in terms of a locker room vibe, in terms of a marketing standpoint for the Blackhawks to trade a guy like Taves, which I don't think I'll ever will see that happen. But even like a Keith or a Seabrook, I think they would if they could get those numbers off the books. But I guess is there any truth to rumors involving any of the Blackhawks core guys, and can you potentially see any of them being dealt over the offseason?
Yeah, I haven't heard them being shopped too much, if at all. And I just think, you know, like you mentioned, with some of the new, no movement, no trade clauses with guys like Cade and Seabrook, and even Anisimov, who he didn't win a cup with the Hawks, so I don't consider him a core guy, but I think he'll get moved in the offseason because his no trade clause becomes a modified trade clause where he can name 10 teams. But getting back to Seabrook or Taves, I just don't think that's going to happen, not only because of the no trade clause, because their cap hits are so big. And I don't think it's because of the locker room at all. You know, they've already been forced to trade away some great locker room guys, and Andrew Shaw, especially, you know, having to put put Marian Hossa on LTIR before this season. It looks like he's not going to come back. So, you know, they've dealt with a lot of adversity in the room this year, losing guys, and it could be a big part of why they're in the pickle they're in. So I don't expect those guys to get moved. I think, if anything, you know, if I don't know if they get together, the Hawks brass, and say, yeah, you know, Taves has had three rough seasons in a row, but he is your leader, and he's a guy who could still play hard and play on both sides of the puck very well, one of the best forwards to do that in his generation, that maybe they do diminish his role a little bit. Maybe you see him playing third-line center. Maybe Seabrook, you know, he's been on that third pairing a few times this season, and Quinville cut his minutes back already. Maybe you see him start there and play there all season next year as a third-pairing guy. Maybe Duncan Keith is on the second pairing. And the Hawks need two top four defensemen. So maybe Armin Nisimov, if you trade him, that could help pay for at least one of those guys. So it's going to be a really interesting year. And look, with after this Hartman trade, I like their draft. It should be a decent draft to begin with, and they could go after a guy who's going to be one of the top picks, Swedish defenseman Rasmus Dahlin. The Hawks really need, like I just said, they need some top four guys, and they just need a better blue line overall. So they have two first-round picks now after the Hartman trade.
Scott, final question for you. Last year, after that disastrous first-round playoff knockout, we saw sweeping changes, Jalmerson gone, some coaching staff changes. They're probably going to miss the playoffs this year, something we haven't seen in a decade. What can we expect to see overall, whether it's player personnel, whether it's front office, whether it's Q, what's going to change this offseason?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I mean, they've had under a 1% chance to make the playoffs for, it seems like, the last month now. So you can expect them not to be in, and, you know, it's pretty devastating to the fan base and to the organization. Look, nothing would surprise me at this point with everything that's happened the last couple of years, and they set that gold standard where they usually perform. They raised the bar really high, and even though Quinville and Stan Bowman are the guys responsible for raising the bar, there's a chance that one of them could be out of a job. You know, I think Quinville is the second winningest coach in the league. He still has a lot to offer in terms of coaching, and he's played a huge role, obviously, in everything the Hawks have accomplished. But, you know, you could see McDonough or Stan Bowman maybe thinking that the players do need a change of scenery with what's happening to their on-ice performances.
Scott, when can we look for the next podcast?
Next podcast, I think it's going to be up this week. Me and the great Chris Bowen are going to talk. Probably by tomorrow or midweek, we'll have a one on the Hartman trade.
Awesome. Scott King, who writes the Chelsea blogger on WGNradio.com and also co-hosts the Blackhawks Crazy podcast with Chris Bowden. Plenty of Blackhawks coverage all season long and in the offseason. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thanks, Adam and Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right, man. There he is. Well, it'll be interesting to see where this team goes forward. I've already seen some criticism of this trade just because Hartman was young and looked so promising, but when you have really no other options and you got the opportunity to get another first-round pick, I completely understand it. So, let's look at the highs and lows of our weekend. For me, buddy, 12:30 a.m. Saturday morning. Went to the curling club, watched the entire gold medal game.
What time did that end?
3:30.
Yeah.
It was totally worth it. So here's what I was thinking, and I think I made the right choice. But I was sitting there at about 10 p.m.
Stacking brooms.
Stacking brooms.
Is that lingo?
Sure is.
They call it broom stacking when you drink after a curling match.
Okay.
Or while you're watching and
You were stacking brooms while you watched the historical victory.
I was sitting in my very comfortable recliner at home with a beer in my hand and thinking to myself, there's no way in hell I'm making this till 12:30 if I sit right here. So I got in the car, and James and Krista already gone to bed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I got 2.5 more hours till this thing even starts. So I got in the car, drove to the curling club, and where people were watching this. It was like a party.
Yeah,
at 12:30 in the morning. It was awesome.
So you were at the curling club from 12:30 until about 3:30?
Yeah.
Just stacking brooms and watching curling?
Just stacking brooms, watching curling. It was a lot of fun. I got a couple of videos I posted. People were going nuts. You got to understand that, like,
I know,
for curlers, this was the Super Bowl.
I get it. And curling is just getting bigger and bigger by the day. It's sort of turned into a hipster thing now, though, which kind of it totally is. It's totally like a hipster sport.
Why is it a hipster sport?
100%. Like, because it's
all
so...
All of a sudden, something becomes slightly trendy and it's hipsters?
Kind of. A little bit. Like, but it depends on who's going to be... I guarantee you Wicker Park, if it doesn't already, will have some sort of curling club there. Where people will be in their flannel shirts.
Well, there is
drinking,
that bar.
They'll be drinking Paps.
There's that bar on Ogden or whatever that... On the west side that, like... sets up a curling sheet.
Curling's totally hipster because the hipsters can be like, look, we can get into a sport other than those stupid, like, NFL, like, an NBA and all the mainstream sports. We can get into curling because it's kind of popular, but it's not too popular. It's why hipsters love hockey, too. Hipsters love the Blackhawks.
Who do you know besides me who curls?
Everybody. My buddy started doing it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Because I'm not hipster at all.
I know you're not.
I'm, like, the most boring...
I don't know. You stayed at the curling club till 4 a.m., man. That's not that.
That is
too boring.
That's actually the most exciting thing I've done in about 3 weeks.
What time did you sleep? Like, you're a father. What time did you sleep till?
Well, I said, look, honey, I'll trade you Saturday for Sunday.
Yeah, that works.
So I slept till 10, and then Sunday I got up early.
And you had to take care of it, James.
It was good.
That's
it,
a trade off.
Totally worth. There's no way I would have made it through the whole thing if I had stayed home. No chance.
So were people actually curling at the club and kind of watching and like, or was everyone just glued to the TV the whole time? Because that's
they weren't curling during the thing, but there was some curling going on before it started. Because we had to stall till 12:30 in the morning.
That's kind of a tough sport to watch for 3 hours. I mean, okay, you're a pretty diehard curling guy. There's like a long period between every shot.
It's very similar to baseball in that it's like the ends are like innings, and you can sort of have, if you're at home, you could sort of have it in the background early on in the game. And then if it's close, like you're pretty much watching everything that's going on in the seventh, eighth, ninth innings in baseball, right? It's the same kind of deal.
Do we still do the Sports Central polling question of the day?
We do. We have it coming up.
Oh, I was going to say we should make it, is curling becoming a hipster sport?
We could make that a secondary poll question.
Yes or no? Easy peasy. I say yes.
Why don't you put that out there on your Twitter, at KPowell720, and we can see what they...
I mean, I don't have the sort of exposure on the Twitter that you do.
You still get some votes.
You got to retweet it then.
I will. And once you get past the people making fun of curling, like Kevin still...
I'm not making fun of it.
Okay, but...
I'm kind of into it.
For serious, for a second here. If you, for real, take into account the entire... And there's actually a great story on The Ringer about John Schuster's history.
Schuster's with the mustache, right?
No, that's Matt Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Schuster's the skip, who was on the bronze medal team in 2006. Who basically said, I want to go out and be my own skip and have my own team. And then was terrible in 2010 and 2014 in Sochi.
So this was redemption
well,
year.
What happened was is the USA Curling or whatever the federation set up a high performance center. To like try
high
to
performance center
to try to it's like the it's like it's like have
what's
you,
the high performance
have you
center
seen like
curling?
Have you seen Cars 3?
No.
Parents who've seen that movie will get that reference and know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, no, but they literally tried to set up this thing to try to improve to find the best curlers. And they didn't invite Schuster. He wasn't invited.
Why not?
Because you had been bad. They were trying to replace him. So he goes on his own and ends up beating all these curlers that were in this high performance center.
Redemption.
Starts 2-4 in the Olympics, looks dead, looks lost again, looks terrible.
Yeah.
And then they win out to win gold. It is one of the better Olympic stories.
I'm with you. It was great. Matt Hamilton, by the way, people were tweeting at me that he looks like he could be a brother of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Because we were trying to figure out who would play the team in the movie that's going to come out.
I can't grow a mustache like that, but he's got some similarities to Apollo Boy for sure. Kind of got a little bit of a baby face going on, a little chubby, yeah, a little thick, a little Midwestern thickness going on there. Yeah, I could see it.
I want to get Joe and I talked about this before the show. I got to get one of these guys on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to get a curler on.
This is when all these guys start doing the rounds. You know, when they get back and they're trying to keep the fame alive, maybe get endorsement here or there.
Yeah. Well. There's no doubt that for me...
It was awesome. It was great. I was texting with my buddies while that was starting. I'm like, there's no way I'm staying up. I can't. I'm tired. Whatever. And I'm like, I hope I wake up to a gold. And I woke up to like all these messages in our WhatsApp group. I was like, hell yeah.
You should have said... Oh, man. It was... It was great. All right. The worst, though, this NCAA scandal not going away. We talked about it on Friday's show. Sean Miller ends up having this. After we were done on Fridays, when the Sean Miller news came out, they supposedly have him on a wiretap talking about a $100,000 payment.
Yeah, it was interesting being out in Arizona because a lot of just sort of like chatter I could kind of hear from locals and stuff was all about that. I guess that I have a couple takes from that. I will say this, that some people are calling this stunning. And they're shocked and appalled. Like, what?
No.
We all know this has been going on. It's just finally been brought to light.
Yeah.
Maybe it's horrible. Like, there are certain things we all kind of know in life. And everyone kind of, like, you know deep down in your gut that, okay, that's probably going on. And then...
it's like people are still cheating in baseball.
It's horrible.
Hopefully they get caught, but there's still
and then
a
Yahoo Sports sweeping report comes out and details everything, and everyone's like, I am appalled. I am stunned that college basketball players are getting paid money. So that I've sort of found comical over the past few days. And I will say this, that some people are like, well, this is the trickle-down effect from a broken NCAA amateur aspect of things. And I'm like, well... okay, but that doesn't mean the players or the families or the if anybody's off the hook. You know, it's almost like people are trying to justify, like, well, this is the NCAA. This
right.
is their...
No.
Well, okay, maybe it is, but it doesn't mean that it's okay to go ahead and take payments from Andy Miller and Christian Dawkins and all these lowlifes who
You're
did
right.
This.
The system's broken. That doesn't mean that you should get away with breaking the rules. But... since you brought that up, that's what I want to talk about. I mean, we can nitpick, all right, this guy got a free dinner from an agent, and Miles Bridges' mom maybe got $400 for whatever, and they cleared him in a day, which was amazing. Can't clear it. It took how many years to clear North Carolina, but in like 5 hours, they were like, yep, you're good. You can play tomorrow against Wisconsin because you're playing for the Big Ten title.
Right.
Yeah. I have a potential fix. Because everyone wants to talk about paying players. And I am just a big believer that it is... how are you going to do that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
what's the threshold there?
You're going to start signing these guys to contracts, you know, and then you're talking about kids who haven't even played a single minute outside of high school basketball. You're going to start...
right, and fellow classmates who are grinding are looking at another classmate getting paid. Mm-hmm. Where does it even start? $10,000 a year? $50,000 a year? $1 million contract?
And then what happens when the four-star recruit who you paid a lot more money... turns out to be not that good, and then the two-star kid ends up being great, and was he going to hold out because he wants more money?
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to hold out my junior year because here's what I think could work, and this is just, I wanted to actually talk this out, get your guys' opinions on this, and for listeners live, 312-235-2525, because I think every suggestion that gets brought up is going to have something you're not thinking about, you know, some unintended consequence. But starting with this, get rid of the one and done rule, okay? Now, there's a lot of people who don't believe that's going to fix anything because it's going to put more kids who aren't ready into the NBA, and it's going to hurt that product, and it's going to hurt the... I agree that that could be a consequence. But here's why. If you get rid of the one and done rule, but you allow them... this is where it's going to be a little radical. Allow them to enter the draft, be eligible for the draft at a high school, out of high school, but still go to school with draft rights. So the Bulls could pick a guy fourth overall or whatever, and if they and the player agree that they're not ready, they can go to UCLA or whatever, you know, they're supposed to go.
Let them develop for
this
a year
is how
or two.
This is how it works in hockey, by the way.
Yeah, I was just going to say
okay?
That. That's how they do it in the
And
NFL.
It works pretty good. So,
well, we see it in the NBA, too, with international players.
Yes. Well, that's the other point I was going to bring up.
That's essentially the same thing.
What Mirotić did.
Right. You have the rights to them while they develop in the EuroLeague for a year, 2, 3 years, whatever it may be. And then when they're ready, they come over.
Because we're pretending like the NCAA isn't already a minor league for the NBA, for the NFL. And I do want to keep this conversation to basketball right now because I'm not sure how this would apply to football yet. But for basketball, I think this could work. So you allow them to go get drafted if they're worthy of being drafted. And then it takes away that risk because a lot of these kids, I think...
they're worried they're going to get hurt. Like, there's so much factored into it.
So the team has your draft rights, but you don't get paid yet. You don't get your money until you actually come out. However, I think that they should be allowed to sign with an agent, which would be different from hockey. Hockey players actually cannot sign with an agent. But I think that there could be some value in working. I think what that does is maybe take away some of the shadiness.
I was going to say, where it eliminates a lot of the backroom dealings.
Yeah, just let them. You sign with an agent, and what's probably going to happen is because you can't pay the agent, right, because until you get your contract, you're sort of just working. Those agents are working pro bono until you go. Now, that's going to create them. Probably, I'm talking about unintended consequences here. Is there going to be some pressure from that agent to say, all right, go get your contract that you're guaranteed if you just go to the league? Maybe, but that team has to be ready to bring you up.
So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they're working together. So that, to me, I think that helps prevent the product on both ends from getting hurt. Because their team's not going to call you up until you're ready.
It'd
right?
kind of be cool. There'd be a different sort of aspect, you know, watching a Michigan State game and there's a forward who, this guy next year is going to be on the Chicago Bulls. That's a whole new story.
Would watch it.
There would be like a whole different aspect, you know, for every team. You'd be basically watching your guys. Now, let me ask you a question, though. Would a signing, let's say you draft the rights to a player, is there, like, does a player agree to, do they sign on to say like $1 million signing bonus?
You don't get it until you go up. Like,
but there has to be some guarantees involved.
Well, so here's where the fine, but here's where,
like, so every
money to me comes in. I also think that the NCAA needs to allow these players to capitalize on sponsorship opportunities. If somebody wants to pay them $1,000 to sign 100 autographs, if they're worth that,
yeah.
They're, every one of these guys, like, no different in radio. We're our own brand.
Yeah.
And if the player is worth that outside of the team, I think that they should. That's where I think the agent being involved could help, because while, and it could also, that would also help the agent from pressuring the kid to go get his contract if he's not ready yet. If the agent is allowed to sign the player up to, like, hey, You go do this commercial for the local Chevy dealer in Champaign or whatever, you can do it. And they can work on those deals.
But doesn't that open up like a whole wide range of sketchiness and backroom stuff? I mean,
it wouldn't be back room. It would be all front room, right in front of you. If a guy is worth
look at the Adidas. Look what happened with the Louisville and the Adidas and the shoe deals and all that kind of stuff. Like, you, the sponsorships can sway people certain ways.
But you know what? If Adidas wants to pay some high school kid $100 million because they think he's going to be that good, that's the risk they're taking.
Yeah.
I think one potential flaw is who's controlling the development. So, like, if, for example, the Bulls took Marvin Bagley, that's his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a tough time seeing Hoiberg calling Coach K up and saying, hey, so we're going to need Bagley to play 15 to 20 minutes. We want him on the block. We want him to do this, do that. You know, like, I don't think that there's a Coach K equivalent in hockey, or at least I don't know one, in college hockey that, you know, you can... I think they would take orders from NHL coaches, whereas guys like Coach K, Izzo, Calipari, you know, I'm the boss of my program. I'm not going to take orders from Hoiberg or...
It's a good call. I do think that there should be some sort of signing bonus that they get up front. Like in baseball, you get a $2 million signing bonus, then you develop in the minors, and then you get paid, you know, a rookie contract when you do get called up to the majors, $500,000-$600,000, whatever it may be.
Okay. I mean, I'm not against that. I'm not... Why do you think that they should get some money up front?
I just think that because then that could... I guess because the root of, like, all of this, the whole argument is whether or not the kids should be getting paid or not be getting paid. And if the Bulls own the rights to you, you should be getting something from that immediately. Like, to be like, an organization owns the rights to me, I should have something substantial to say, okay, I'll give you those rights, but you got to give me $1 million.
See, what I would say is I think that there should be some guarantee in that draft team.
Okay, maybe. Okay, that's a good call.
Maybe you don't get it. So for instance, let me give you an example. Let's say you're the 20th overall pick, so you're not quite ready to go in right away. Because let's be honest, if these kids getting drafted top five are probably going to the league right away. Okay, but let's say you're the 20th overall pick and you're set to go to UCLA, and that team doesn't think you're ready. Maybe you don't think you're ready. You go to UCLA, and then guess what? You tear your ACL. You know, it doesn't really work out. I do think that there should be some guaranteed, and it's probably slotted by draft pick, maybe. Like, you're guaranteed $1 million or whatever it is, and if you never get called up and you're done at UCLA, that's when you do get that money. The team, and that's the risk the team is then so taking by drafting somebody who might not be playing for you next year.
So I guess that's my question, too. When you draft a guy and you have the rights to him, how long do you have the rights for?
Well, in hockey, it works the 30 days after you are done playing at the college level, whenever that is. You have 30 days to sign with that team. And if you don't, then you become a free agent.
Free agent.
Which I don't necessarily like, because I think that would give...
So basically, the Bulls...
Like, LeVar Ball's like, oh, yeah, my guy's not signing with you, because I want him on the Lakers.
Right.
Look, I'm not saying it's perfect, and a lot of that would have to be worked out. But we got to come up with some kind of solution where... Because I just cannot see really a day where these programs are paying all these kids, where these schools are paying all these kids' salaries.
So you gotta find
some middle way to make it at least more fair to the. I cannot argue with players who say, "Look, I earned my university all this extra cash, and I got nothing out of it but a scholarship." And a lot of people believe that's a lot, and by the way, I do too. But If a program gets, you know, $10 million off of you, off the player of the year because you won a national championship, like, I can see where they're like, well, what did I get out of that for sacrificing it? Especially on the football level, where they're literally sacrificing limbs.
And their brains.
And their brains, which is probably the first thing I should have said.
Yeah. I like the idea though, Hogue. I think there's something there. I think it basically is kind of that middle ground where the NCAA, and whether they want to admit it or not, that's a huge cash cow, the product that they're putting out for basketball and football. They don't want all of a sudden the product to be downgraded, and the NBA doesn't want their product to be downgraded. So I think it's interesting. We'll get Mark Emmert on the line next here on Sports Central. I'm kidding, but maybe you should give Emmert a call and throw that idea that way. I like it, Hogue.
Yeah, starting point?
Start a conversation.
Yeah, I think the difficulty comes in with Title IX and the revenue sports and non-revenue sports. You know, like, obviously it's easy for us to talk about the basketball and the football and, like, these guys deserve it, but then how do you pay the baseball players and the softball players and the swim team and the golf team?
Right. Well, that's where I think Hogue's solution could work, because the schools aren't directly paying the kids, and the NCAA isn't, so you can't really make that argument. You could be like, well,
right, the softball players aren't saying,
you could be like,
I'm making my school all this money.
Exactly. The rowers can't be like, well, where the hell's our money? It's like, well, you know, your parents are watching when you guys race.
But then does the school have a difficult does the NCAA have a difficult time recruiting players to play those sports that aren't getting paid?
I don't think so. Scholarships are still involved. I don't think kids are all of a sudden going to be like, wow, I'm missing out on all this money because I play lacrosse rather than, you know, I'm about 6'8 and can't dunk the basketball.
Frankly, the non-revenue kids are you know, getting a better deal.
And I think
they're getting a full ride.
Yeah.
And most of those sports lose money.
And I mean, nobody's getting into track and field to be the next LeBron James. I mean, they all kind of, you know, they understand.
Those are Olympic sports. They want to go to the Olympics.
They want to go to the Olympics, or even less so. I think a lot of people, you know, yes, I think for some, yes. But for the most part, like, a lot of kids are like, okay, maybe I can get some money at college. If I'm lucky, I'll get a scholarship. That's the reasonable majority of the population of high school kids, right? I mean, we can all dream about that, but let's be realistic. Kids are just like, wow, if I could even get half off my tuition this year, wow, mom and dad, I got a full scholarship. That's like hitting goal for so many people in this country. So for us to put like everyone on the level of NBA, NFL, stardom, let's be real here. Like, majority of Americans understand, okay, you can have dreams. Maybe I could go for the Olympics, but I'm not going to be a billion-dollar man like LeBron James.
Yeah. Did you post that poll or no? You don't have to.
I'll post it right now.
The one I posted before the show, today's official Sports Central poll question is, Is the NCAA basketball scandal making you less interested in March Madness?
No,
this year?
Not at all.
Like, well, 77% are saying no.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. How could you be all of a sudden like, no, I'm not watching the March Madness? Are you kidding me? These players being getting paid the whole time? Yeah. You got to be kidding me.
That 23%.
But let me throw my $20 on my office March Madness bracket while we complain
right,
about this. Right.
Right? Yeah,
let's,
sure,
let's all gamble on teams we know nothing about.
You know that's, get that 23% is all Arizona fans and anybody who would be affected by this. Like, well, Louisville Cardinals have no shot, so I am not interested in.
Come on.
All right, maybe it was a stupid question.
Oh, no, it's not a stupid question. Stupid, I'm just like, it would be the hypocrisy of somebody being like, I'm not going to watch now when they're likely have some sort of skin in the game at their office pool or with their buddies or with whatever it may be.
Oh. All right, well,
it's a good poll question. I wasn't knocking your poll question. I think
there's something there, though, with the specs. I'm not saying there's certainly things.
I like that. Has anyone ever thrown that out there, or is that just like all raw Adam Holgren?
I mean, certain elements from different things, but I kind of just put some, you know, thought about it hard over the weekend, and I think there's something there. All right, you hear the music. It's time for Buried Headlines, and I got some good ones for you today.
All right.
Let's start with this one, though. Saw this over the weekend. The hockey team from Stoneman Douglas. And very cool that we mentioned Friday that all the baseball teams wear Stoneman Douglas hats.
Yeah.
But they actually have a hockey team, even though it's Florida. Yeah, they won the state championship over the weekend.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's great.
So a great moment for them.
Kev, were they selling the hats at all?
They're going to auction them off.
Awesome.
For the Broward... there's a fund involved that all the money. A lot of the players and managers are going to sign them. And they're going to eventually auction them off.
That's great.
Stuff, so, yeah. Good stuff there. Mitch Trubisky, future Super Bowl MVP. Mitch Trubisky, Chicago Bears quarterback, taped a episode of Celebrity Family Feud over the weekend. Did you see this Bears insider Adam Hogue?
I saw it on his Instagram.
Okay. Celebrity Family Feud via an Instagram post revealed the quarterback will be one of the rookies going up against the veterans, though it didn't include the date the episode will air. In the picture, Trubisky poses next to former North Carolina Tar Heels teammate Austin Prohl, son of one-time Bears receiver Ricky Prohl. My question, Adam Hogue, is will the rookies beat the veterans or will the veterans come out on top in the Celebrity Feud match? And how well will Mitch Trubisky do? Does he dominate? Does he lead the pack? Does he show off his leadership skills?
I still can't figure out if Mitch is just, like, really football smart or if he's still, like, regular guy smart, too.
You know him better than I do. I haven't had a conversation
with
him.
Yeah, he was still kind of guarded, though, as a rookie.
He seemed really guarded. I think they really trained him up for the Chicago world of the Bears.
I saw him playing golf with Austin Prohl on his Instagram. Looks like he has a good golf swing.
One of my, I'll say this.
Maybe we should challenge him for a 2-on-2.
Yes. Like, I have no interest in becoming friends with the athletes I cover, but one of my dreams is to play golf with one of these guys who's like an all-star in their sport and one of the best and just kick their ass on the golf course. It would feel so good to go out there and shoot like low 80s and they're hacking away. And be like, that's right. You can hit a baseball 450 feet.
How about that humble brag, Joe? Guys, you shoot mid-80s. I'm making the Olympics.
That's me talking a golf ball, a putt into the hole.
All right. Speaking of...
You shoot mid-80s, Hogue? No?
My best ever is 87.
Oh, okay.
So I'm more mid-90s.
Yeah, that's smoky on the course.
Yeah, okay.
You're talking mini-golf or what were you...
Yeah. All right, Jordan Howard was on Good Morning Football this morning, and this exchange happened.
Alshon Jeffrey, a former teammate of yours, he, of course, said famously that we're going to win the Super Bowl, and then he went out and won the Super Bowl with another team. So that night, when they won the Super Bowl, the Eagles, you tweeted this. Guess I need to make a guarantee like Alshon. Well, Jordan, look where you are. You're on the set of Good Morning Football.
Okay.
There's a beautiful camera staring you in the face right over there. I would like you to look and make a guarantee for this season for Jordan Howard, for the Bears, for whatever you want.
The Bears, we're definitely going to have a win this season. We're going to get to the playoffs, so I'm guaranteed we'll get to the playoffs.
Oh, I love it. All right,
That's what I like to hear.
First of all, that's the most forced guarantee I've ever heard. That's why I wanted to play the whole context and not just him saying it.
Is that a bad omen? Is Jordan Howard going to somehow end up on a different team and win a Super Bowl and the Patriots next year?
Yeah.
Also, do you like that show, Good Morning Football?
It's pretty good.
It is actually pretty solid.
They do a really good job. I like it.
I agree. Like, some of the MLB Network stuff, that some of it is outstanding, but I don't think the MLB Network understands that people watching the MLB Network are baseball junkies, and there's a lot of generic baseball talk out there. You're watching it and you're like,
come on, give me somebody who knows what they're talking about. But I agree. I like the show.
This story was in the Kansas City Star. A naked man on a yellow ATV led police on a wild chase through the Northland for more than an hour Sunday afternoon. Chase began at 2:20 p.m. when police investigated a report of a suspicious party, a naked male, on an all-terrain vehicle near 8400 Northeast Sam Ray Road in Kansas City. The man was suspected of being under the influence of drugs.
I was going to say meth. What do you guys got in the drug pool here? What kind of drugs was he on?
Bath salts.
Bath salts? I'm going meth.
What's the one where you like light it on the spoon thing? Is that meth? I don't know anything about drugs.
I think you can do it with meth. I don't know. Heroin?
I don't know anything.
You got heroin, you get bath salts, I'm going with meth.
The man eluded officers for a while in a field by Northeast Shoal Creek Parkway. He eventually found a break in a fence and led police south on Northeast. Okay, enough with the streets. The man then circled back and got onto Interstate 435. And there's actually video of this. He was driving the wrong way on an interstate, naked on an ATV. And the video is hilarious.
I gotta see this.
Yeah.
That's some serious bath salt behavior.
I'll tweet this out. Yeah. I think he might be right there.
Tim Tebow. One-time Heisman winner, now baseball hopeful in the New York Mets system, Adam Hoge.
Yeah.
Walked on a water sprinkler in the outfield and sprained his ankle over the weekend.
I hate it when those things pop up.
Question to you, though. Serious question. There's like Tebow is one of the more divisive guys. You love him or you hate him. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I don't know why, he's just not like him. I never really could pinpoint why I didn't like him. But at the same time, when I really break it down, I think, Kevin, why do you hate Tim Tebow? I really don't. I actually think I respect and really like what he's doing and going for it. He's not a guy that seems like he's going for a side act here with the minor league thing. I think he really wants to be a Major League Baseball player. No, but everybody loves to hate on Tebow.
Well, he's a nice guy.
So do you like Tebow or not? Are you Team Tebow?
I'm neutral.
All right.
I don't like him. There's really no, like you said, there's really no reason to dislike him.
Yeah.
But I don't like him.
You guys see what Keith Law tweeted about that injury?
Did not see that.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Oh, God.
I don't know. Like, for a while, he rubbed me the wrong way because it was like never-ending stream of thanking God, thanking Jesus. But I'm also like, okay, I can't really. The guy's faith, you know.
Well, the way he talked all the time was like, it was like a parody of himself.
A little bit, yeah. I think that's what bothered me.
I'm so excited.
Tim Tebow, we're going to work so hard. Yeah, thank the Lord.
All right.
So Tebow, sprained ankle.
We'll end on this note. Really cool moment in the Iowa-Northwestern game last night. We have this audio, right, Joe?
Yeah, I got the play-by-play and the comments.
Chris Street, for those who don't know, former Iowa basketball player who died in a car crash in 1993, just before his 21st birthday. And he holds a school record for free throws at 34 in a row. And Jordan Bohannon, part of the Bohannon family that you've seen around the Big Ten for a long time, really good player on Iowa now, was tied at 34 with Chris Street in this record and was at the free throw line last night on the Big Ten Network.
And 34 straight. And he does miss it. So he does not break the Chris Street record. Because he tragically passed away in a car accident back in 1993.
You share a really special record. I don't know about you. I couldn't have shared. There's something special about that. He missed that one pretty badly.
I don't know if it was on purpose, but you're
that's
right. It's rare for him to miss, let alone miss like that.
Yeah. I mean, I heard it here. Carver Hawkeye Reedy, you heard people yell out Chris.
Yep.
You can get as intense as you want to about basketball. There are some things that are so much bigger than basketball. A lot of them.
We're back tomorrow. Sort of a pseudo White Sox pregame. We'll take you right up to the first pitch. Ed Farmer, Darren Jackson will join us here on Sports Central. We'll talk to you tomorrow.